Want to hear one of my favorite sounds? That's the sound I hear when I get one of the questions right on Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, I guarantee it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. I've been saying I wanted to learn another language for the longest time now, and I'm finally doing it this year with Babbel. I signed up for French because there's a lot of medical history that I'm interested in that was originally written in French. Plus, I've always wanted to travel to France, and when I finally get there, I'd like to be able to get around. Now, Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and they're rooted in real-life situations delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I actually recorded my first lesson in French. Here, take a listen. Matching au revoir to goodbye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. When will I get the cool accent?
Bonjour.
All right. Got it. Now, that's just my first lesson, so don't judge me or my accent. But I did pick up on a few things that I thought were interesting. There's a lot of spaced repetition and cognitive flexibility being used in their lessons, and I've been pretty impressed so far with the program. The app and regular website are both super easy to use and look great, and the lessons can be done in 10 minutes or less. So far, I feel like I'm learning a lot, and we have a very special deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, babbel.com/barbellpod. That's BABBEL.com/barbellpod. There's rules and restrictions may apply, but 60% off. Check them out, guys.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Hey, welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Instagram Live. I am Dr. Jordan Feigenbaum. It is the 8th of October. We're doing an Instagram Live Q&A. First off, some announcements. Thing number one, yesterday posted a new training vlog over on the YouTube channel. If you're on YouTube right now, you can click back and check that out. It's got some training. We talk about static stretching. We talk about cancer and exercise and a bunch of other cool stuff and review some of the user-submitted form checks. Other thing, newsletters drop in this weekend before Saturday. So if you're not signed up for our newsletter list, you should do that. Announcement number three, these shirts, there's this colorway, there's black, there's also a navy blue. Those are going to be available very shortly. They've already shipped to our distributors, so keep a lookout on the website for that. And then we've got at least one new template dropping this week. It's our Titan 2 template. Also a couple free downloads for the impending CrossFit Open. So a bunch of cool stuff coming up. So be sure to keep checking the website. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, wherever you want to partake in your barbell medicine daily dosing. Now, let's see if we can get into some questions you guys have submitted via Instagram. I'm recording this for YouTube. It'll be up there later. Provided there's some good questions, good content, etc. The thing is, streaming live on YouTube is problematic, not only for views because the algorithm, but also just internet bandwidth, and yeah, it's not great. So anyway, let's see if we can get some questions from you guys and go from there. Do you have a dog or are you planning on getting a doggo? Yeah, so the context for this is I posted a new trial that came out. This was in New England Journal of Medicine, Journal Watch, and they were talking about how dog ownership actually has a tendency towards lowering cardiovascular and all-cause mortality. I don't have a dog, mainly because I move quite frequently, and certain places that I've lived don't allow pets. Although the place I'm in now does allow pets, and there's actually a dog park in the building, which is kind of nice. But I don't have a dog yet, but maybe soon. Freaking Cardinals unsubscribe. Yeah, I'm a Cardinals fan. I mean, as far as sports go. So Cardinals are tied 2-2 with the Braves. I mean, I feel like every season seems like in the postseason we end up playing the Braves. But yeah, I'm from St. Louis. I'm a Cardinals fan. You can unsubscribe. hey, Jordan, recently I've been eating a poor diet in terms of not getting a lot of fruits or vegetables. Just after recovering fully from a small flare of colitis, but still feel tired every day. Yeah, so if you actually had colitis and you have a medical condition like ulcerative colitis or something like that, I would definitely work that up with your doctor and then their associated nutrition professional rather than kind of trying to self-manage this, because I don't think that's the play here. But in a more general sense, we do recommend that people try to get 10 servings of fruit and vegetables per day. So that's, you know, 5 and 5, 6 and 4, something like that. The idea is, one, it's going to automatically make sure that you're taking in a pretty good dose of fiber. Our goal, fiber goals would be 30, 35 grams of fiber per day. To the phytonutrients, the phytosterols in some of these foods, the flavonoids, et cetera, all these other, you know, fruit and vegetable nutrients that are isolated to these types of foods tend to be very health promoting. We have pretty good evidence suggesting that consuming fruits and vegetables tend to be health promoting. So would recommend, as a general rule, 10 servings of fruit and veg per day. You can split that up however you want to. Would you say that bench press and overhead press is enough for front delt development? So the anterior deltoid. I guess it depends on who you're talking about. If you're talking about a beginner, and you're talking about sort of just muscle growth of the anterior deltoid or the entire, you know, deltoid, they're all three, separate muscle bellies or all the muscles of the shoulder girdle. Yeah, you could make an argument that bench press and overhead press, probably along with a row and something like, and maybe a vertical pull as well, would be enough to develop all of that in a fairly untrained individual, although there's no real need to restrict them to those movements. They're not any better for developing hypertrophy in the deltoid or the muscles of the shoulder girdle than other exercises like a dumbbell bench or dumbbell press or dip or weighted push-ups potentially or incline bench or, you know, like literally just hammer strength. I mean, again, as long as the range of motion is similar or exercises that have a large range of motion, that you can progressively overload with weight and training volume, then really the biggest kind of limiting factor towards hypertrophy is going to be how much volume can you do without incurring too much fatigue. And so probably movements that are not compound movements are probably going to have to get into the program for bodybuilding purposes. So the question was, is bench press and overhead press enough for front delt development? I mean, if we're talking from a hypertrophy standpoint and we're talking long term, the answer is no. You're probably going to have to do some isolation work for that. If you're talking about for strength purposes, then I wouldn't think about individual muscle groups. So, yeah. I know that is kind of a longer answer and sound bites are preferred, but I would just try to get out of the mindset of, you know, is this enough for one particular muscle? It's I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good kind of thought process or useful thought process that I think engaging in regularly. I think I just not do that. Let's see. Why do people say red meat is bad for you? Well, I'll get to that. Okay, here we go. Why do people say red meat is bad for you? Does it actually contribute to increasing LDLs, or does eating too many calories and gaining weight from a calorie surplus contribute to high LDLs? Thanks. So a couple different issues here. So there's definitely evidence out there suggesting that high intake of red meat can increase certain rates of cancer. Okay. Particularly colorectal cancer is the thing we have the most data on. So you look at the IARC, International Association for Research on Cancer, and compiled all the data on either processed and unprocessed red meat consumption and incidence of colorectal cancer. And yeah, there seems to be a link there. And so the recommendation right now is to limit the number of servings per week to about 3 servings of red meat per week. And then when you talk about LDL, so LDL means low density lipoprotein. Lipoprotein is just a lipid and a protein. Lipids cannot really travel through the blood on their own. They need to be carried around by a protein. So that's the protein component of the lipoprotein. So LDL is not cholesterol. LDL is cholesterol that's packed into a protein. And so that's what you measure on a standard lipid test, for example. Does eating saturated fat intake, which is generally in a pretty good, it's contained in a pretty good amount in most red meat. Does consuming higher intakes of saturated fat tend to increase LDL lipoprotein count? And the answer is yes. We have this in multiple lines of evidence. So metabolic ward studies where they actually admit people to either a research facility or a hospital and keep them under lock and key and feed them only certain things. Yeah, increasing dietary saturated fat intake above a certain level tends to promote increased amount of LDL. And then further, when you replace saturated fat intake with things like monounsaturated fats, polyunsaturated fats, whole grain foods, fruits and veg, or protein, you tend to get a drop in LDL. And LDL is associated, a high LDL is the single best predictor we have from a lipid panel as far as predicting ASCVD, which means atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, which includes things like heart attack, stroke, peripheral artery disease, etc. So hopefully that answered some of all your questions. If the take home is, should you eat all this, unlimited amounts of red meat? The answer to that is no. And so diets like the carnivore diet and some iterations of the ketogenic diet tend to be less, tend to have some risk associated with them and depends on the potential benefits somebody's getting from that diet. So weight loss, yes, can affect, weight loss and weight gain can affect your total, your cholesterol panel. But, I would not try to think about that independent of red meat intake when you're thinking about constructing dietary patterns that are health promoting. Jordan, is Austin doing Raw Nationals? Nope. And will you ever do another Raw Nationals in the future? I mean, maybe. Yeah, I just don't really like coaching and lifting the same weekend. It's not really fun for me. And I don't think that I want to, at this point, participate in the USAPL for now. Doesn't mean forever, but for now. What's a good belt, style or brand preference? Thanks for doing these. Yeah, I don't really have a belt preference, like as far as brand goes. I have a Best Belts, which is made by Dean Best. I think it's fine. Pioneer Belts also tend to make a good product. Enzer is got a ready-made belt. If you get just a black color, then you can actually get it shipped to you within, a reasonable amount of time. Everything else is going to take you a long time. The SBD lever belt is very expensive, but also very good. I just think a 4-inch single prong belt that's 13 millimeters thick, it tends to be the de facto default size rather that I recommend and for most folks. And I think getting it from Pioneer or Best Belt, reasonable choice there. Thoughts on Mad Cow 5x5 program? Yeah, I don't think it's very good. So it was good in the period of the internet where free training resources were limited, but now there's a bunch of free stuff on the internet, and there's a lot of limitations. There are a lot of limitations to the Mad Cow program. If you like it, that's great. But my opinion, I wouldn't advise somebody to run that. No. How to target different parts of the thighs for hypertrophy? Well, I assume you just mean quadriceps versus hamstrings because you're not really able to target different areas of the quadricep versus different areas of the hamstring unless you're talking about like not targeting the rectus femoris muscle, which is quadricep muscle that crosses both the hip and the knee joint and tends to not get fully activated until there's a substantial amount of fatigue in the quadriceps already. So one, training the quads, knee extension, hip flexion, mostly knee extension is going to be the big one. And then training knee flexion, some hip extension is going to train the hamstrings. A lot of different exercises to choose from. So it takes me at least 20 minutes to get through an exercise, warm up and work sets. Is that too long? I spend at least 2 hours in the gym, want to cut down. I mean, 20 minutes to get through an exercise is not long. If you're doing three exercises each time, that's an hour. So I'd want to know why it's taking you 2 hours then to get it in. If it takes you 20 minutes to get through an exercise, the warm up and the work sets. That's what I'd want to know. Yep. Is it possible to start steadily gaining weight without a significant change in diet? I mean, yeah, if you eat the exact same thing, then you become much less active. You could start gaining weight. That happens. Or potentially if you start medication that promotes weight gain, particularly through water retention. all sorts of things can conspire or confound your sort of weight variable depending on what's going on. What's worse, smoking or obesity? I don't know that I could say that one is worse. I mean, obesity definitely has its hands in more chronic diseases, and you could make an argument that it's the healthcare costs and the quality of life suffering from being obese maybe is more substantial than smoking, but smoking's still pretty bad. So you prefer neither of those things to affect somebody. Are speed reps on the main lifts beneficial? Example, 10 sets of three with a lightweight and under a minute rest. I mean, if you want to get better at producing force at high velocity, so high velocity force production, sure, then you would want to train that via high velocity training, which you have to do at a lightweight. It doesn't really help with low velocity force production, which are heavy strength training. And then doing it on a 1 minute rest doesn't mean anything. That all it's doing is limiting your ability to actually produce high velocity force production. So it tends up being a little more conditioning, and then may actually be able to stimulate a little bit of, hypertrophy via the fatigue that's generated through the artificially short rest periods, whereas it wouldn't if you had a longer rest period and you were just squatting 55% for doubles or triples for 10 sets. Probably not a big, hypertrophy stimulus there, unless you get fatigued enough by the end of those, by doing them every minute on the minute, that you're actually getting substantial motor unit recruitment. So what can I use as a substitute for a pit shark or belt squat? You're going to need a loading pin and a dip belt. So you can do that and stand on boxes and do a belt squat like that. You could also have a landmine attachment where you have a barbell jammed in the landmine, and then use your dip belt on one end of that, and you do it like that. There's also a way, I guess you could do it theoretically on like a something with like a low pulley setup where you can stand above it and hook a dip belt to that. Those would all work. Yeah. Have you ever tested how many words you can type in a minute? I'm tempted to do it, but I'm not going to do it because I don't want to waste everybody's time for a minute. Coming to the Miami seminar. Stoked. Very cool. Yeah, we're selling out. So upcoming educational opportunities via Barbell Medicine. So our Boston Pain and Rehab seminar sold out. We have, I think, two spots left at our Portland seminar, our regular Barbell Medicine seminar with Dr. Baraki and I. December, we're all off. January, we'll be in Reno for a pain and rehab seminar with Dr. Michael Ray and Dr. Derek Miles. So I'll be in Reno with those cats. And then we'll be in Miami as well. Dr. Baraki, Leah, Tom, Alan, the whole crew will be down at Steffi Cohen's gym, Hybrid Performance in Miami, the first weekend of January. So still some spots open for that. So get signed up today. Otherwise, you're going to miss your spot. My close grip bench is stronger than my competition bench, which has a wider grip. Is this unusual? Yes. Do you recommend using a wider grip bench for long-term investment? As most people say, it uses more chest musculature. Well, most people would be wrong. It doesn't use more chest musculature. In fact, when you look at studies on actual muscle recruitment with different grips, there's almost no difference in any grip, provided the range of motion is the same. So that's close grip versus wide grip versus thumbs from the smooth or something like that. I think through the three conditions that were tested under similar relative intensities. So it sounds like your competition bench is either you've newly switched your grip to a wider grip because somebody told you that you should, and it's not yet trained compared to your close grip bench, or your wide grip, your competition bench is just too wide for your current strengths and current training development. So yeah, it just depends what you want. If you're not going to compete in a meet, it doesn't matter, really. You can, play around with it if you want, but I don't think necessarily that having a wider grip bench necessarily kind of correlates to a higher bench potential. Yeah, I don't see that. You see just such a huge inter-individual variation. And for more on that, I talk about this in the bench prescription video that we made with Alan Thrall. It's available on our channel. Yeah, check it out. Just started week 5 of the Legacy 12-week strength template and was surprised to see 5-3-0 tempo squats are in for just 1 week. Yeah, it's just in there for the pivot week. Yep. Is there any chance of you and Austin being guests on the Joe Rogan show? I mean, I guess it's possible, but it's not like Joe's, you know, called us up and we're just turning him down. So I think that how this works is Joe has to invite you on a show. And I don't know that he's going to invite us. Recently, after squat days, when I stand up from my desk, my VMOs cramp up really bad. Barbell Medicine's stance is that this is a sign of not recovering well. Oh, there's a lot to unpack here. So one, the VMO stands for the vastus medialis obliquus. This is a made-up muscle. It doesn't actually exist based on any criteria we have anatomically. This was made up via a physical therapist in the 60s looking at 4 recently amputated legs. They found that there were fibers at the end of the vastus medialis, which is one of the muscles of the quadriceps. They found that the distal end of it, right by the knee, had these obliquely running fibers, and they called it the VMO. Actually, later petitioned Nomina Anatomica, which at the time was responsible for naming all these muscles. They petitioned that group to actually say that there was a VLO as well. So they were trying to not only add a muscle to the sort of dictionary of muscles and the VMO, they were also going to add the VLO. And then they wanted to rename the quadriceps to the sexiceps, because now there were 6 heads. Anyway, none of that worked. The VMO is not a real muscle. Cramps generally, I guess you could maybe call it a sign of not recovering well, because it just means that fatigue was relatively high, unless there's some medical condition. But for most folks, acute cramping is just a little bit too much fatigue. Doesn't mean anything if it goes away. If it just happens when you stand up from your desk and then it goes away, just could be positional. I wouldn't really worry about it. Yeah. Jordan, popular question on YouTube currently: what do you think is harder, bodybuilding or powerlifting? I mean, I don't know. I've never done bodybuilding, never competed in a bodybuilding show, so I don't think that I can actually say which one is harder. Both of them are, you know, the problems and the suffering and the difficulty. These are all champagne problems, right? If you can actually afford to engage in this recreational pursuit of strength or muscle size, then you're doing okay. You're doing okay in this world. So I probably wouldn't, you know, try to say one is harder than the other, one is more suffering than the other. Like, it's lifting weights, you know. Jordan, what does the evidence say on the efficacy of regular mouthwash use as well as flossing? Thanks in advance. Yeah, I don't know. That's dental stuff and dentistry. The evidence-based model for dentistry is slowly emerging, but it's far behind the medical, the evidence-based medicine sort of movement. So, yeah, I'm not sure. Disc herniations compressing nerves can fully heal? Indeed they can. Yeah. That's like a Googleable thing. You just Google that and you're like, yep, pops up. Cool. Hey, Jordan, I love your stuff. Thanks, buddy. It has all been very informative and helpful for my growth in moving weight efficiently. Thanks, man. Thank you. Thanks for saying that. Yeah, gas up one of your friends. You know, just hype them up. Call them up and say, hey, you're doing great. I miss you. I like you. Something like that. Some positive vibes. That'd be good. Right, let's see. Jordan just finished the hypertrophy template yesterday, going back to strength week 1 tomorrow, pulled 405 for a set of 7. Nice, man. Cool program. Yeah, awesome, Brandon. Nice. Can leg press and RDL replace squat and deadlift if the only goal is hypertrophy? Yeah, sure can. Sure can. I would actually argue that the RDL is probably better for hypertrophy. The hamstrings, and you know, and potentially even glutes, than the deadlift. I mean, really, again, what you're looking for is range of motion, the ability to progressively overload via adding weight and reps, volume being more important here than absolute intensity, and then the ability to do a bunch of reps and sets without getting too fatigued. So you think about like how, you know, what could you do more of in a given week or a given session without incurring way too much fatigue that would overwhelm the system and compromise your hypertrophic response to the training? Leg press is going to be better than a squat. RDL, since it's a little lighter, you know, but you still have a really long range of motion. Range of motion is very similar, especially for the hamstrings and glutes and erectors. You know, it's probably a better choice from a fatigue standpoint, although, you know, I could argue it's not that much different, and but it may be a little bit, maybe a little bit better. And then people really get worked up about, well, you can use more weight on the squat. Well, not really than a leg press, but, you know, then a leg extension. It's like, well, sure. But the question isn't how much absolute weight can you use. The question is how much motor unit recruitment can you get? And we know that, you know, doing sets of, you can get the same amount of motor unit recruitment doing sets of 5 and sets of 30, you know, just at, as long as you're willing to go near failure. The question isn't, you know, how much motor unit recruitment can you get by the second rep of a set? The question is how much total motor unit recruitment did you get at the end of a whole set? How many reps were stimulating the sort of muscle growth? And then how many of those sets can you do in a given week, in a given session? So anyway, I think people try to overly complicate this hypertrophy thing. I mean, really what you need to do is pick exercises that have a big range of motion, can be loaded or done for enough reps that generate that stimulate motor unit recruitment, and then that you can do enough volume of them to continue to drive hypertrophy over time. And I don't know if having an allegiance to a particular movement is a great way to be, a great way to think about hypertrophy. Hey, Jordan, is doing leg extension machine bad for your knees? Nope. There are no things that are bad for your knees except for maybe acute trauma at high velocity. And, you know, acute uncontrolled movement at high velocity might be bad for your knees, or like other people hitting it. But yeah, people are like, oh, it's open chain and there's this long moment arm on the knee. It's like, so what? Yeah, tissues adapt. People get better. You're able to tolerate more stuff. Is there evidence to show a salt craving is relevant to actual hydration/electrolyte imbalance? So those are completely different things, hydration and electrolyte imbalance, although sometimes they happen at the same time. In general, people, the thirst response to exercise or sweating in an active environment tends to be a little delayed. And then as far as craving salt, most individuals won't have a conscious sort of, you know, hey, I'm craving salty things. Most people won't, and that's because we all tend to consume enough sodium in our diet. And in general, you can't make yourself significantly hyponatremic, low sodium in a way that's clinically meaningful from exercising or competition, unless you're doing something fairly extreme or you've suffered like heat stroke or heat related illness. And, you know, that's then again, one of the things you would look for is potentially a hydration issue, a salt issue. But we're talking about people doing 2-a-days, 3-a-days training or team-based sports, and then doing something silly like drinking, you know, 10 gallons of free water or Gatorade or something like that in order to get rehydrated. That those sort of things would be the real reasons why you get this sort of hyponatremia, this low salt level that's actually clinically meaningful, meaning that can cause symptoms or potentially bad outcomes. Most people after they exercise are hyponatremic. It's just this, you know, thing that happens, but it's not clinically significant, doesn't do anything, and it resolves on its own when we eat food. But actually the recommendation is to add sodium to both pre- and post-workout meals. That being said, most people probably get enough dietary sodium anyway. It's probably not a big deal. Yeah. How would you explain to a friend why a multivitamin is not beneficial? It's a good question. I probably wouldn't actually explain to them that it's not beneficial unless they ask me, because otherwise I'm just wasting my breath. Yeah, multivitamins not associated with reduced mortality or morbidity, that's diseases. If anything, it's related, particularly high doses of antioxidants, high doses of other vitamins are associated with bad outcomes, like increased rates of cancer, for example, or increased all-cause mortality risk. So no benefit to show, no evidence really to show benefit. outside of patients who need to take a multivitamin due to either a problem absorbing vitamins or some sort of very, very restricted diet where their doctor would be prescribing them sort of multivitamin supplementation. So these are people who've had like gastric bypass or who've had like part of their ileum removed or other parts of the GI tract operated on. And then they might have to take a supplement or, you know, people with like cystic fibrosis or other issues where they malabsorption is a concern or just super restricted diets. Those are the patients that get prescribed multivitamins, you know, among others. But just your general, you know, otherwise healthy person, yeah, multivitamins don't do anything. Just waste your money. Any recommendations on resistance training focus for boxers? How does muscle fiber types play into resistance training goals for athletes like this? Muscle fiber types are mostly genetically predetermined. You can get some shifting within different fiber types, type 1 and type 2. They don't go from type 1 to type 2, but in the type 2 muscle fibers, you can get some switching from high velocity force-producing muscle fibers to low velocity force-producing fibers and back and forth depending on training. So yeah, just for boxers, I think, you know, conditioning would obviously be a focus and then doing significantly more high velocity strength work than I would somebody who is not involved in an explosive sport like that. Sure. Does your body get accustomed to a lower calorie diet, meaning you start to burn less and less fat? Well, as you lose weight, sure. Yeah, your basal metabolic rate goes down, total daily energy expenditure goes down. Some evidence suggesting that part of your NEAT, non-exercise aerobic thermogenesis, basically just calories you burn from non-formal exercise, you tend to move around a little bit less. But in general, this doesn't seem to preclude weight loss in a calorie when people are actually in a calorie deficit. You know, people tend to continuously lose weight under controlled sort of situations. That being said, you know, weight loss can be difficult for sure. How would you approach your client if they were worried about one leg being significantly stronger than the other? Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think it would just depend. You'd want to get more information. So one, you'd want to know why they're concerned about it. How did they assess this? Because there are things like, you know, hamstrings, asymmetry, that do predict a higher risk of certain injuries in certain team sports, particularly soccer, for example. And so in that, how you would assess that is effectively you're doing, you know, one leg up to like a set of 8 repetitions at RP 8 or 9 or something like that on one leg and then do it on the other leg and say, oh, is there an asymmetry? And if it's above a certain level, then maybe that confers an increased risk in soccer, but in barbell training, probably not. That being said, what you're going to find is that tends to be eliminated via resistance training, period, meaning that the weak side, when you're doing these bilateral exercises, when you're doing the weak muscle, quote unquote, tends to get a little bit greater stimulus than the stronger muscle, you know, provided technique and range of motion are relatively similar from rep to rep. And then on top of that, I think that including unilateral work can be useful too. I don't know that I would just focus on all bilateral stuff. I don't see a good reason for that. So I think between, you know, just having that conversation and then maybe seeing if you need to take a step further. But the final word on this is we're all asymmetrical. Every one of us is asymmetrical. No one has equal strength side to side or antagonist to agonist. And that's some of that is by, you know, is been selected for, you know, over millennia. But that's another podcast. Anyone in particular you're excited to see compete at Raw Nationals? Sure, Leah Lutz. I'm excited to see her lift and go out and smash some PRs. Claire Zai, she's going to go out in the 72-kilo primetime class and smash some PRs. That'll be cool. Sam Calhoun, Austin's client, she's going to go out in 63-kilo primetime along with Lorraine Baraki, Austin's wife. They're going to both be in primetime. I'm really excited to see how they do. Anybody else that I am excited to watch? Yeah, I don't know. Probably not. Was medical school worthwhile to you? Would you have chosen a different route? Yeah, no, I thought medical school was fine for me. I think the only thing I would have done differently, I mean, I got a master's degree in clinical anatomy and physiology prior to going to medical school, which I actually found the education to be super valuable and the skills learned and the knowledge, the fund of knowledge, like great. And honestly helped refine my study technique, allowed me to do so well in medical school. So from a like actual like skill development, I thought it was great. But the actual how did that transfer to helping me get into medical school was not that great, mainly because it's hard to evaluate like how rigorous a master's program is compared to more undergraduate coursework. So I think it would have made me a more competitive applicant to do the same number of additional credit hours in undergraduate science education to help bring my GPA up, make myself more competitive than the actual master's program I did, although the skills and fund of knowledge gained from doing the master's program, I think, was superior to anything I could have done undergraduate wise. But yeah, medical school was great. It would have been nicer to have a better, I guess, pick of which medical schools that I wanted to go to. But hey, it all worked out. I met Austin and his wife and a couple other good friends from medical school. That was, you know, obviously been worthwhile. And so maybe it all is supposed to work out like this. Would you review a snatch or clean and jerk video for a future training vlog? Maybe. Yeah, I'm not saying no. Thoughts on strong lift 5x5, similar to starting strength 5x5 based on Reg Park. Starting strength is not 5x5, it's 3x5. And strong lift 5x5, I actually met Mehdi in London. I think, you know, if you need a place to start for your resistance training, it's fine. I would prefer you do our beginner template. The beginner prescriptions are free version. We think that's how people should start training. And also sort of reading that text a lot gives people a better lay of the land for like why they're doing this, what the next steps are, etc. But, you know, I'm not going to ever dissuade somebody from getting into resistance training. So will intermittent fasting interfere with strength improvement? Maybe. Yeah, I mean, we don't really have good long-term data on this. What you'd really want to know is, does intermittent fasting actually do anything unique? Does it, for instance, make people lose more weight? Does it have a health-promoting effect that a similar calorie-level diet where people don't intermittently fast, is there any unique benefit to intermittent fasting? The answer to that is no. Yeah, two recent meta-analyses on this. No benefits to intermittent fasting over a regular diet. If you prefer it, that's cool. Helps keep you adherent to some sort of diet. That's great, but it doesn't improve health and reduce any incidence of any sort of disease compared to a similar diet where you don't intermittently fast. And it's certainly not going to make people stronger. So I think if I was hedging my bets, I probably wouldn't recommend intermittent fasting if getting super strong is important to you. But on the other hand, I'm not going to tell you that it's going to hinder your gains. Unless it's the only way to get to keep you adherent to your diet, I probably wouldn't recommend it in general. Hey, Jordan, just wanted to thank you and the Barbell Medicine team. Today, I just hit a 4-plate deadlift. Hey, that's awesome. Congratulations. Have you followed Sorenex Squattober? Squatting almost every day seems like a fun and community event, but adapting to the volume would be interesting. I have not followed it because I have a powerlifting meet. Yeah. If you want to squat every day, I think Matt Perryman's Squat Every Day is the book to read. It's actually some pretty good read on coaching principles, but I would not recommend people who are only squatting 2 or 3 days a week to just ramp up immediately to squatting every day just because it's October. I want to increase my low bar squat and quad hypertrophy. Would you choose high bar or front squats as a supplemental accessory exercise? I'd probably just low bar squat some more. I mean, you could pick high bar or front squat. High bar probably is a little more transference to, low bar squats, but they all work the quadriceps, you know, as long as you're going to near failure. Developing your low bar squat, doing more low bar work is probably going to be the best move there. But this all depends on the individual, of course. Had a great lecture in med school about preventing sarcopenia and cachexia in med school today. Teacher said we need to get people to train. Pretty stoked. Wasn't expecting that at this point in time. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, sarcopenia and cachexia, it should be noted, are not the same thing. Sarcopenia is a loss of muscle tissue, literally meaning a poverty of flesh. And then cachexia is, and in sarcopenia, usually it's loss of muscle, but you can actually preserve or even increase the amount of body fat. There's also this term sarcopenic obesity. Whereas cachexia, on the other hand, is this global loss of both fat and muscle. It's a little bit different. There's also other symptoms associated with the cachexia. So, yeah. Is it true that there's a max amount of protein that your body can utilize in one meal? No. Your body has excessive resources that it will allow it to use, keep, transform, and et cetera, and convert dietary protein into, you know, muscle tissue, energy, stuff like that. Do you still overhead press? I have not overhead pressed in 5 or 6 weeks, I think. Yeah, because I'm doing this powerlifting meet. So what's wider, the English Channel or Mike T's hips? That's close. We're going to have to, you know what? We'll have to measure. When I see him at Raw Nationals, I'll break out the tape measure, but I might have to bring another one, tape it together. What is the best way to squat for a meet, low or high bar? Either, you know, some people will be able to move more weight, low bar. I hesitate to even say the majority because it just really depends on the person. In fact, obviously there's some very, very strong squatters who squat high bar in powerlifting and then in Olympic lifting who tend to actually be even stronger, squatting at a given body weight. They almost universally do high bar squats, but you know, you could argue about their anthropometry. So it depends on the person's anthropometry. So if you have a meet coming up and you've only been squatting high bar, would I switch to low bar for the meet? Probably not, unless you've had extensive history training low bar. On the other hand, if you've been training low bar and you have a meet coming up, I probably wouldn't switch to high bar for the meet. I would just, you know, get better at low bar. If you don't have a meet coming up and you want to sign up for one, then, you know, I don't know that I would change unless you have a significant amount of time, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, to work this out. But I would try to pick one, you know, that you want to kind of use as your priority squat, and that getting stronger in that movement is more important to you if you have this idea of doing a meet in the near future. Thoughts on laser light treatment as a form or treatment of plantar fasciitis? No. Yeah, there's the reason why there are like hundreds of different treatments for plantar fasciitis because none of them work. We don't really know why this is happening. So yeah, I would not recommend that. For someone returning from a herniated disc injury, would leg press aggravate that if the back was kept neutral? No, not necessarily. Neither would squatting. And even if the back's not kept neutral. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is depending on your thought process, your expectations, your previous experiences, your education level on this. All of these things can influence how you actually respond to exercise. So we wouldn't necessarily expect you to have pain with any of those movements, but you might, even if your back is perfectly neutral, because that doesn't really correlate to the pain experience. So if you're trying to come back and you want very specific advice, I would recommend consulting our pain and rehab specialist. They do this every day. They're the best in the industry. I mean, I'm not just saying that, like, I'm really glad they decided to link up with us, but these guys are great. So Dr. Ray and Dr. Miles, that this is what they do. So, yeah. Also, why do the doctor's charts for testosterone ranges not account for age? They do. Yeah. Yeah, there are published norms for free and total testosterone based on different age demographics. So, wearing that shirt for the fifth day in a row. Well, this is, to be fair, this is a new shirt. Like, this has never been worn before, but am I wearing the same logo? Yes. Yes, I am. What kind of training plan is ideal for a client who wants weight loss, loves cardio, but also enjoys weightlifting? What would you program for them? Weightlifting, cardio, and a calorie deficit. I mean, yeah, it would just depend on what sort of resources they have available to them. If you mean Olympic weightlifting, you know, then I'd probably have them do Olympic weightlifting most days that they train with weights, probably all days. I try to get them to lift weights 3 days a week, and I'd have them do a push, a pull, and a press. And the pull usually would be some sort of Olympic lift. Maybe one day I'd just have them deadlift instead of doing like a cleaner snatch variant. But if you're not talking about Olympic weightlifting, then yeah, I mean, I think 2 or 3 days a week resistance training, full body workouts, do conditioning that that they can be adherent to and they prefer, and calorie deficit. Yeah. How do you go about planning your jumps for warm-ups attempts at a meet? Saw your post where you jumped 600 to 700 plus, but ideally you would have hit 675 in between. I don't know how close to get on the last warm-up. Yeah, it's all personal preference. So like my deadlifts, I'm probably going to open at 305, 672, and then jump to 730, something like that, 727, whatever that is, 732, whatever. And then 748, I think, is the third. That's the plan. But last warm-up prior to 672 will probably be 600. I mean, and I'll probably just go 135, 225, 315, 405, 500, 600 as my warm-up, just because I'm comfortable doing that. It's all personal preference. Hey, Jordan, is androgenic anabolic steroid-induced hypogonadism reversible after short-term use? Sometimes. Yep. Also, do test levels return to their previous normal? Sometimes. Yeah. Again, I know that you've asked multiple questions about anabolic androgenic steroid use on previous lives, and my advice to you is to not use them. Not because I'm anti-anabolics. I think there are a time and a place for those things depending on risk benefits. But for you, yeah, the risks far outweigh the benefits as far as I can tell. And, you know, hate to call you out, but that's just my take on it right now. And so, again, just to further this conversation for a second, you know, you think about certain sarcopenia patients, you know, the recommendation, the guidelines right now on sarcopenia do not necessarily recommend anabolics, but in some cases they may be, you know, beneficial compared to their inherent risk. Certain professional sports or other high incentive where there's a great incentive to actually perform a certain level, you know, yeah, the benefits might outweigh the potential risks provided someone actually knows the risk. And I, you know, again, having looked at your profile a little bit, I just don't think that's for you. And, you know, you're an adult, you can make your own decisions, but I think that I would probably think twice about this. And then I will also, just as an aside, probably not ask any more questions about this on the live, mainly just because the public perception of them is just, it's not in a place where I think I want to talk about them a lot. Although we probably will do a podcast on the stuff in the future, just because people keep asking us. But I think I'd like to concentrate all that in one little location. What is the most amount you should adjust your macros in terms of grams of protein, carbohydrates, fat? How often should you change it if you are at an ideal body weight and body fat but want to gain strength? Yeah, a lot of questions here. So there's no max or minimum amount that you would adjust grams of protein, carbs, fat in an isocaloric or equal calorie situation. And then again, if you are at the ideal body weight and body fat, I don't know that you need to, you know, adjust your macros in order to gain strength. That's probably not true, unless your protein intake was significantly compromised. And so we know that, you know, it's anywhere between 1.4 to 1.6 grams per kilo body weight of protein per day in folks who are either gaining weight or maintaining weight can yield optimal sort of resistance training outcomes with respect to hypertrophy and strength. So our recommendation usually is to towards the upper end, 1.6 grams per kilo body weight per day of protein. Start there. If you prefer more protein than that, that's fine. But that's the only thing I feel kind of strongly about with respect to actual macro recommendations in an isocaloric situation. Let's see. Is it normal that myorep movements take a long time to go up in weight? I don't know. It just depends how many reps you're trying to do. I was able, you know, my experience has been, I've been able to either add weight or reps each week when I incorporate them in my training. So that's what I would plan on doing. Doc, do you ever plan to practice medicine? Probably not, as my only, occupation. No. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah. I think, you know, obviously there's a need for people in the trenches to practice medicine and take care of patients. But I think that the calling by a barbell medicine and public health is probably a little bit more rewarding for me. And that's probably where I'll spend the bulk of my time. Yeah. Would you modify your training at high altitude? No, can confirm. When I went to Colorado at high altitude, I did not modify my training. Is there any evidence to suggest? So usually when questions start out there, The answer is yes, but is it strong evidence? Is it useful evidence? But all right. Is there any evidence to suggest that reducing body fat has a beneficial effect on inflammatory conditions such as eczema or rheumatoid arthritis if one were near the cutoff for waist circumference? Yes. So yeah, if you're obese and you have too much adipose tissue, that's the definition of obesity, then yes, reducing body fat can improve patient reported outcomes in both of those conditions. So yes, to that particular question. What are your top five supplements for powerlifters over 40 years of age? Yeah, so these are no different than my recommended supplements for people, for lifters at, you know, adult lifters at any age, because being over 40 doesn't mean you're old or a special population. So a whey protein or other protein supplement, depending on your dietary patterns, creatine monohydrate. I would also recommend that people take beta-alanine. Recommend that people maybe consider taking caffeine prior to a workout. So we did creatine, we did beta-alanine, we did caffeine. And then the only other, you know, thing that you might find to be beneficial would be like a citrulline malate. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff that's going to be that you know, you have a slight benefit. But, you know, really those first four even would be the ones that I think I would recommend mostly. Yeah. If you got a puppy, which kind would you choose? Also, hi, you're awesome. Thanks, Sarah. I think I would get like a mini husky. Yeah, because they're cute. My dad tried to get me a this doodle. Thing's like 90 pounds. It's a horse. It's too big. It's too big. It would absolutely wreck my apartment. So, yeah, maybe a little husky. Yeah, let's see. I find I can hook grip way more than I can deadlift for a single. Okay, but it rips up my thumbs after a few pulls. Then I go to straps for rep work. Any issues with this? I mean, I don't know how well your grip is trained. I'd want to know what you're pulling. Have you considered using a single layer of athletic tape on your thumb? That's probably what I would start doing, so you can, again, just develop your grip, because at some point you're going to need that grip strength, right? Would you recommend vitamin D supplementation if blood work shows low vitamin D? In general, that is the treatment. So yes, but it depends on how low it is, because that helps determine the dosing and what agents are recommended, either vitamin D2 or D3. And then you should probably check your vitamin D levels in 6 to 8 weeks to make sure that you're replenishing it enough. I wouldn't recommend that people just take vitamin D. What supplemental squat would you recommend for someone who struggles to go below parallel? Asking for myself. Pause squats, pin squats, something like that. Yeah, one of those two probably. Any thoughts on the new Sony cameras or lenses? Any interest or not really into it? Well, I have two Sony cameras. I got a A6500. That's this camera. And then I've got my A7R III floating around here somewhere. So the A7R IV came out, and the new, what is it, 7100, 7200? I don't know. Yeah, and the A9 Mark II. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of bummed with the stuff that Sony's come out with in the last year. Like their product, they're still, I think, leaders in the mirrorless camera world. They've got the best specs for sure. We're all waiting for this, you know, new camera to drop that does 4K, 60 frames per second, and 10-bit out, and, you know, all this other stuff. But right now, they've got the best of both worlds for photography and videography, and their autofocus is, you know, maybe the best in class. So I already got two Sonys. I don't think I'm going to upgrade until something new comes out. Yeah. Can following a vegan diet be just as good as one with lots of animal protein if calorie needs are met and protein intake is well beyond recommendation for those who strength train? Yes, but I would make the caveat, they don't necessarily need a higher protein intake. The data shows, again, 1.6 grams per kilo body weight of protein per day, even in vegan protein, can be, you know, can yield optimal results from a training plan. So I think that, you know, and that's for people in a weight gain or maintenance state. So if you were losing weight, I'd probably jack that up a little bit, but that'd be the same advice for individuals, eating animal products. Yeah. Advice on choosing a medical specialty. Yeah, I think, you know, obviously your rotations are going to be useful as far as like figuring out like what I want to do this day in and day out, because you're going to see the, you know, daily grind of a particular medical specialty. And then I think that I would try to do some electives in one or two of the fields that that you think that you're interested in. But the first thing is you got to figure out if you want to do medicine or surgery. And then after that, this becomes a little clearer, because then you start figuring out like, all right, you know, what kind of surgery would I want to do? Or in medicine, do I want to treat only adults, or do I want to treat adults and kids? I mean, you know, you're able to refine. So excited to see you deadlift 750. Me too, man. It'll be 748, but in my heart, I'll think it's 750. I'll lie to myself. I'll believe. Hate your hat. Cubs fan sucks twice. Fair enough. Fair enough, man. Jordan, there's a dude at my gym who works out at the same time, and I've never said hi, and now it's been a year, and it's too awkward to do now. Should I change gyms? That's weird, because there was a guy earlier in this live chat who was like, there's a dude at my gym who works out at the same time as me. He looks like he lifts, but he never said hi. I want to say hi, but it would be too awkward now. Should I change gyms? I think you just got to do the bro thing and, you know, ask him for a spot or something like that, and then strike up a conversation. There you go. Just people connecting people. That's what I'm doing here. Evening, Doc. Would love your thoughts on this. Saw a training video of LeBron, Chris Paul, and Carmelo Anthony. These are all NBA players for the unaware. I myself am a cultured individual. Let's see. They were all working with their trainer, and the trainer had them all doing sumo RDLs. Do sumo RDLs have a transfer to vertical? Probably minimal transfer to vertical jump test. I mean, the best thing we have for the transfer to a vertical jump test would be jumping, bounding exercises. Then you'd talk about, you know, fairly light half squats and quarter squats, where people can actually move the weight quickly, high velocity. And but yeah, does the sumo RDL, does that recruit posterior chain muscles? Sure. It's a way to train the glutes and the hamstrings and adductors. I think it's fine. I don't know why you'd have them do sumo versus regular, but, you know, in a basketball player, I don't know that it matters either. Yeah. Jordan, long time to see. Recommend a program after powerlifting 2. You could do powerlifting 3. Yeah, it's one thing to do. You could also go to like hypertrophy plan, hypertrophy 2, and then jump back to powerlifting 2. Or strength, general strength and conditioning, and then pop back to powerlifting 2. Something like that. How good are AMRAP sets at predicting 1RM? If they're more than 5 reps, if they're more than 3 reps, probably not that great. But yeah, maybe 5 reps is kind of really where the trailing off tends to happen, you know, as far as like accuracy. Is there a physiologically optimal time of the day to train? So I actually kind of looked into this and this chronobiology or chrono training, and it appears no. You look at some of the studies done on this, people tend to perform best 7 to 8 hours-ish after waking up, but that's generally their self-reported exercise time anyway. In untrained populations, doesn't tend to be a reliable transfer there. So let's see. What lens was I using at the track the other day? This guy. 70 to 200 f2.8. This big old guy. Yep. Hands are going numb while sleeping at night. Don't bother me much during the day while training. Going to try splinting at night. Concern or not really? That sounds like, you know, common things being common, you think about carpal tunnel. And so try the splints, see your doctor, and make sure it's evaluated. You're not missing anything. But yeah, that would be the first thing that comes to mind, just especially if it's bilateral. So the splints can help. And if it goes away, yeah, you're thinking it's carpal tunnel, but nothing gym related that you need to worry about unless you end up having surgery on it. All right, I've been here for an hour. We've got 30 seconds left, so I'm going to do some announcements. 1, check out the vlog from yesterday. It's over on YouTube. 2, thank you guys so much for watching. Please share this with one of your friends. Doesn't follow me, you don't think follows me. Helps grow the barbell medicine community. You guys are great. And 3, if you haven't signed up for our newsletter, it's dropping this Friday, so sign up for that. Get your latest barbell medicine stuff in your inbox. See you guys later. Okay, I'm back out fresh on the scene. Franchise best on the team. Blue faces busting out the scene. New life is something like a dream. Back out fresh on the scene. Franchise best on the team. Blue faces busting out the scene. New life is something.